Well, foremost in everyone's mind a month after the Boston bomb attacks, the severely injured. Down the list, but also of concern, the emotional fallout. We saw all those heroes run toward the bomb victims. Well, this week, people who ran the other way told the Boston Globe they're in agony over that decision. One doctor said, maybe I could have saved a foot. Also this week, mental health officials from the Israel Trauma Coalition are in town. They met with 100 teachers from Watertown, Massachusetts, which saw a lockdown, a massive manhunt. For some, gunfights and bombs exploding right outside of their windows the Thursday and Friday after the bombings. Weeks later, kids are withdrawn, shaky. And parents are feeling it as well. According to Tina Sherry, who founded Boston's annual Mother's Day Walk for Peace and the Lewis D. Brown Peace Institute to offer resources to other families after her 15-year-old son Lewis was shot and killed in 1993, she has seen an uptick in interest in this Sunday's walk from suburban moms who say they had an intellectual understanding of and compassion for victims of violence, but now have a more visceral awareness of how their urban counterparts are living. In fact, there were two homicides on the day of the bombing, six deaths since. We've got two moms with us in the studio. Catherine Geekus is one of those self-described suburban moms from Newton, Massachusetts. Welcome.
Thank you.
And we're also joined by Tina Sherry of Boston's Dorchester neighborhood. Your son caught in crossfire as he walked to a meeting of teens against gang violence. We still can't grapple with that. So it's been 20 years, but I always want to say so sorry.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's still with you.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I want to start with Catherine. Catherine, take us back to that Friday when all of Boston was in a lockdown. People staying inside, no cars on the road, stores closed, and people like you in Newton, which is one town over from the neighborhood where the shootouts were with the bomb suspects, literally locked in your home?
Yeah, and I was fine when the lockdown was on in terms of anxiety level, because I felt safer inside than out. My husband, who was working from home, was updating me on the news, but I was baking cookies and cleaning the house and avoiding the news as much as I could just to stay calm.
Yeah. Then the lockdown was lifted. Police said people could go outside, and you thought what?
Well, I was on the phone with my brother. My 16-year-old son came into the kitchen and told me he was going to his friend's house five blocks away. And I flipped. I told him he was in mommy lockdown and he wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah. Because why? What did you worry about?
Well, I really do think he looked like bomber number two and they hadn't caught him. And what I said to him was, you're not going out until bomber number two is caught. And in the back of my mind, I realized that was a ridiculous statement, but I was really hoping they'd catch the bomber so I could let my son out.
Well, it's not a ridiculous statement, Tina.
Right. I say, welcome to my world.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
And the world that we experience every year. I mean, Lewis never went anywhere. And he didn't go anywhere because shootings were happening on a record number back in 1993. And he was driven everywhere, living in the inner city and driving your child everywhere. It's unheard of.
And we should say for people outside of this area, Dorchester has some beautiful neighborhoods, well-tended, beautiful, large homes, but also
Victorian houses, tree-lined homes, parishes, just like any suburban neighborhood. Yet, a certain section of it, violence continues to happen there. And the day Lewis walked is the day he was killed back in 1993.
Wait, was that the first day you let him walk?
That was the first day I let him walk because he was driven everywhere. And again, I don't want you to be caught. I don't want you. I mean, he couldn't wear certain outfits because those are what gangs are known by. And he couldn't understand, well, why can't I wear this?
Catherine, I see your face.
This morning I was thinking, should I take all his hoodies away? Saturday night, I told him he couldn't go to a friend's house unless he slept over because I didn't want him walking home. It was going to be late when he got home.
And this is in Newton, we should say one of the safest towns in the country.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I thought I had calmed down since the lockdown, but I did that Saturday night and it was the first time I did that. That was when my brother said, now you know how it feels to be an African-American mother.
Yeah.
And my immediate reaction was, no way, they can't feel this way every day. There's no way someone could live like this. That's what I said to him.
It's our reality.
Yeah.
Yet, at the same time, that's not who we are. because it is 1% of the population. Yet their families, just like our Newton neighbors, that are raising our children, are driving our children for schools. We have beautiful parks. We have the zoo. We have the golf course. We have all of these amazing things in the community. Yet, it's a certain percent, and it makes it seem like we are under siege.
Catherine, you know, it's funny. I also had forgotten what Friday felt like, and when you started talking about it, my skin started tingling again, that feeling of leaving for work early Friday morning and not knowing where these suspects were. And tell us more about, as you say, this insight that's given you and this feeling that you now can't shake.
Well, it's funny. I thought I did shake the feeling, so this interview is kind of surprising me.
Yeah.
The next day, it was hard for me to get through my day. Just the adrenal exhaustion that I felt the next day, you know, when you're just wiped from being in a state of fear. I don't know if you are familiar with that. And that's when I realized that I was depleting my adrenals. This wasn't fake. This was real.
Yeah, Tina, you're nodding.
And I'm nodding my head because the day, that Friday, we received a call from the father of the young man that was murdered. And we could not connect because the city was on lockdown.
You mean the father of the homicide victim?
That happened because there were two homicides.
Yeah.
We're talking on the phone, and this father is struggling because he needs the financial resources to bury his son. He said, Mrs. Sherry, I can't go anywhere. The city's on lockdown. So I could not tell him, wait until Monday morning.
Okay.
I had to come in to offer services and resources for him.
Tina, I'm wondering, too, about something that Catherine just said, this adrenaline and her exhaustion. People are saying that they're not feeling quite right since that Friday. How much do you think this, being in a neighborhood that's under siege from gun violence, how much do you think it impacts health?
The impact on health is a chronic impact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're dealing with every single day, one, you're hearing gunshots, then you're hearing, you know, the crime, the homicides, the unsolved murder. And there's really not much time to really take it in and go through that grieving process.
Yeah.
I imagine even when you're not hearing the gunshots, it's like Catherine said, suddenly everything is dangerous. Once you've had gunfire in your neighborhood,
every single noise you hear, it is dangerous. Where when you can walk into the doors of the Peace Institute, there's a sense of safety and a sense of, I'm away from the world right now. I'm really safe in here. I can shed all the toxic that's on me, and now I can go back out to deal with what the world has to throw at me.
You're talking about the Lewis D. Brown Peace Institute, named after your son. That's Tina Sherry, sitting next to her, Catherine Gikas. We're just taking a minute to talk about that skin-crawling fear moms across the country might know. Back with more in 1 minute, here and now. Welcome back. We're talking with two moms, both still feeling the Boston Marathon bombings. Catherine Gikas, because it brought violence so close to her suburban home. Tina Sherry, because it reminds her of the violence already there. Tina's raising one son and founded the Lewis D. Brown Peace Institute and the annual Mother's Day March for Peace after her other, a 15-year-old, who was killed. This year, more suburban moms than ever expected to come to her march. But Tina, the Boston Globe tells of a man who saw two candles in a window, and he asked if it was for the marathon victims and was told, oh no, it's for the two homicide victims killed the same day. The article went on to say that while people in the inner city have tremendous compassion for marathon victims, a Haitian woman from your area lost a leg, and they applaud the huge fund for them, some are asking, where's the fund for victims of crime? Do you feel that way?
I don't feel that. I see that as us using that as a model. While they did this for the victims of the bombing, this is exactly the model that we need to set up, a Boston Victims Homicide Fund to assist those families who can't afford to bury their loved ones. And not only for Boston, but for cities across our country who are dealing with the same issue. We saw it with the Columbine. We saw it with the Newtown. It always happens, and we always say the same thing, but we never go back and look at the model that was set up and then say, how do we now apply it so that all families, regardless of color, culture, class, and community. We are serving the family so that they can bury their loved ones with dignity and respect.
So not begrudging what's happened for the Boston bombing victims, but wanting maybe the same thinking applied to homicide victims.
Yes.
Catherine, I want to mention something else. You told us your brother said, now you know how African-American moms feel. Mm-hmm. But your husband also said something when you did let your son out.
Yeah, that was later that night over dinner together, since I wouldn't let anybody go anyway. He said, look, guys, if the police ever stop you because they've mistaken you for someone else, you make sure your hands are free, that they can see your hands and they can see your face, and that you don't, you know, they know you don't have anything that can hurt them or hurt anybody.
Don't reach in your pockets.
Yeah, he rattled through this list of all the things you need to do to protect yourself from people who've misidentified you and who are armed.
My son now is 21 years old, and he's had to deal with that, you know, because he fits the profile. He's black, he's bigger for his age, he wears his baggy pants, his hoodie sweatshirt. And it was a while when he said, you know, yeah, the cops have stopped me and they've, you know, asked me where I'm from and take my hands out of my pocket and sit on the ground and put my hands. And I wanted to call the cops and says, look, what are you doing to him? You know him. You know this kid. Mm-hmm. So it is something that we want to educate, not to be afraid of the police, but really let's working together so that they're respecting you and you're also respecting them, that you're not profiling them, one, because they're black, and two, because of the community that they come from.
In some ways, that's heartbreaking.
Well,
Tina just nodded yes, you know.
I don't normally have a fear of police. And I never have thought to instruct my son like this, but he's grown like 6 inches in the last year, and he does wear kind of baggy clothes, and it just didn't occur to me. It wasn't something that I thought I needed to do. And when my husband started to give him all these tips, I thought, oh my gosh, he needs to know this. I can't believe he needs to know this, but he needs to know this.
Yeah. Well, you had had two major shootouts, a bomb thrown at police one town over from you, watching all of this unfold on television. And that was amazing, too, because even if you weren't in the middle of it, you watched it. So it didn't matter where you were. It was frightening. Tina, what was it like for you to watch that lockdown and shootout?
To tell you the truth, I didn't watch it.
Mm-hmm. Did I?
I couldn't watch it. I really couldn't watch it because, you know, the terrorists were someone else, but yet they still were here, and they live within the community. So watching the repeat of that, it was too much. It's like re-traumatizing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like knowing that there's a ditch and you intentionally going in and you fall in the ditch, then you can't get out. It takes you back to when you got that call that your child was murdered, that there was a shootout on the street. Mm-hmm. Not as massive of this, but a shootout in broad daylight. So for me, it took me back to all of that. I cannot go there.
Tina Sherry, the funds raised in Boston's Mother's Day Walk for Peace go to your organization. You founded in your son's name, the Lewis D. Brown Institute. Families who've lost a child are put in contact with you. You help them get through the burials, the paperwork, just the talking, the understanding. You've said that the number of moms who might never have thought of this walk, who are in the suburbs, who, like Catherine, were hunkered down, and have maybe a new awareness, are signing up.
That's what they're telling us. They're saying, you know, Tina, we are but minutes away. We're minutes away from Newton. Minutes away from Newton. Chelmsford, Cohasset, Concord, Lexington.
These are suburbs outside of Boston.
Yes, Lexington is coming out full force with a bus. We are one Boston. And if we're one Boston, this division and this wall of black and white that we have put up, mothers are saying, fathers are saying, ministers are saying, it is time to break that wall down and to truly be that one Boston.
And Catherine, nodding and smiling in agreement, I mean, again, it's not as if you are an unaware person at all, but do you think you are permanently changed by those 2 days in lockdown?
I'd say so. I think it's that really is the physical biochemical empathy from a full experience perspective that would say that I'm permanently changed
from having had that feeling.
From having it completely internalized and thinking this people can't live this way.
Yet they do.
Yes.
Yeah.
We do.
That last word from Tina Sherry of the Lewis D. Brown Peace Institute, Catherine Geekus, a mother from Newton. And I want to thank you both, and I want to wish you both a happy, happy Mother's Day.
Likewise, thank you.
You too.
So are you still feeling shaky about recent headlines? Bombings during a race? Women held captive in a house in Cleveland? Feel free, weigh in at hereandnow.org.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. The ICA with Barry McGee. Vibrant paintings and installations capture the energy of the street in this 20-year retrospective on view now. ICABoston.org. And Harvard University, whose Harvard Summer School offers courses for high school, college, and adult students to earn academic credit and experience Harvard campus life. Summer.harvard.edu.